The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: North Carolina announces first $1 million vaccine lottery winner, and Triangle workers want remote work, job change as virus restrictions ease. And we'll begin with: North Carolina announces first winner in $1 million vaccine lottery. Shelley Wireman, a 45-year-old teacher from Winston-Salem, is the first person to win $1 million for getting a COVID-19 vaccination in North Carolina, the state announced Monday. 5 days after the first drawings, North Carolina has announced the winners of its $1 million prize and $125,000 college scholarship. Vienna Martinez, a 14-year-old from Wilmington, won the $125,000 post-secondary scholarship. Those entered into the $1 million drawing were 18 or older. For scholarship drawing, the age range was 12 to 17. Wareman, a mother of three, encouraged others to get vaccinated. She says she got the shot in order to spend more time with the people she loves and the children she teaches. She wasn't convinced that she had won the $1 million until she was congratulated in a video call from Dr. Mandy Cohen, secretary of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. "I was overwhelmed, not believing it," she said, of winning the drawing. "I still don't believe it. Who believes that you're going to win $1 million? Martinez said she had just started a summer job to save for college when she found out she had won. "When I first got the phone call, I thought it was a total lie," she said. "It was exciting, but at the same time, crazy." She told the News and Observer in a phone interview that she hopes to attend North Carolina State University to study criminal law after she graduates high school. Governor Roy Cooper and Cohen announced the two winners. Thank you for choosing to get vaccinated and doing your part to help put this pandemic behind us, Cooper said at the news conference. Taxes still must be paid on the $1 million, and the $125,000 scholarship does not guarantee acceptance to any college or university. For both drawings, those entered had to have received at least one dose of the vaccine, either from Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson. For those vaccinated with their first dose from June 10th to June 20th at midnight, when the entries for the first drawing closed, their names were entered into the drawings twice. Both Wireman and Martinez were vaccinated prior to June 10th, according to DHHS. Alternate names were also drawn in case the first one selected weren't eligible or refused the prizes. Both of the people chosen in the first drawing were confirmed winners, so no alternate drawings were needed. The odds of winning the vaccine lottery are about 1 in 4 million. By the way of comparison, the odds of winning the Powerball lottery averages 1 in 11.6 million, according to the NC Education Lottery. The drawings were conducted by the state lottery on a computerized random number generator on a system that did not store any private medical information, the News and Observer reported. This was the first of four drawings to take place this summer. The next drawing will be held on July 7th. Any resident of North Carolina vaccinated in the state with at least one dose, even those vaccinated prior to the first drawing, will be eligible for the next three this summer. The only exception are those vaccinated at clinics operated by the U.S. Department of Defense due to lack of data, DHHS said. Cooper announced the vaccine lotteries in early June to encourage more vaccinations after the rate of new vaccinations had been dropping for weeks. As of June 25th, 45% of the total population and 55% of the adult population have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, according to DHHS. Nationwide, that rate is 54% for everyone and 66% for adults, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Cooper said he hoped Monday's announcement of the lottery winners would encourage more people to get vaccinated. "We got to pull out all the stops to get this done," Cooper said. "Whatever brings people in to get their vaccinations, we want to do." Cooper also warned those unvaccinated of the Delta variant, a mutation of SARS-CoV-2, which causes COVID-19, that is more transmissible and possibly more dangerous than the first emergence of the virus. Public health officials have said the Delta variant will soon be the dominant strain of the virus in North Carolina and the rest of the country, the News and Observer reported. "If you are unvaccinated, you should be concerned," Cooper said. DHHS reported a COVID-19 cluster in Bladen County on Friday. Officials said the cluster is due to Bladen County's low vaccination rate, with just 33% of the population fully vaccinated. It's unclear, though, if the cluster is due to the Delta variant. The latest available data for North Carolina shows that in the three-week period before May 22nd, 0.7% of cases were from the Delta variant. North Carolina has been under a statewide eviction moratorium since late October, and Cooper said at the press conference that he would announce this week if he plans to extend the order. The moratorium is currently set to expire on Wednesday. Cooper's statewide order was issued in compliance with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's nationwide moratorium, which has been in effect since early September of last year. The CDC last week extended that order to July 31st, which the agency said would be the last extension. Both orders only apply to cases of non-payment in which the tenant has lost income due to the pandemic. We're looking at the data. We're looking at what the CDC has done. And I'll be making a decision this week on whether we extend the moratorium, Cooper said. Each time the CDC has extended its nationwide moratorium in the past year, Cooper has extended the state's order. In May, North Carolina restarted its rental assistance program. Housing Opportunities and Prevention of Evictions, or HOPE, to assist tenants who have fallen behind on rent due to the pandemic. Regardless on whether the eviction moratorium is extended, we think it's important to get this money out there to keep people in their homes with the lights on, Cooper said. The original statewide order was enacted as a way to clear confusion surrounding the enforcement of the nationwide CDC order. Cooper's executive order also requires that landlords, before they take an action to evict, provide the tenant with a form they can fill out that attests that they are protected from eviction under the moratorium. But even without the statewide order, North Carolinians behind on rent who have lost income because of the pandemic are legally protected from eviction related to non-payment until the CDC order expires on July 31st. Next, Triangle workers want remote work, job change as virus restrictions ease. A new survey of working Americans may give employers an idea of what to expect as the coronavirus pandemic loosens its grasp on the economy. There will be many workers looking for new jobs, but many of them now want to work remotely full-time. That's especially true in the Triangle, which was among the top 10 surveyed metropolitan areas in the U.S., where workers prefer to work remotely full-time and where workers plan to seek a new job in the next several months. Some 54% of workers in the Raleigh-Durham metro area want to work fully remote, and 37% will soon join the job hunt. That's according to an online survey in March and April of about 3,000 working adults conducted by consulting firm Robert Half. There is no doubt that workers in Raleigh are feeling confident in their job prospects, said Kendall Strickland, the Raleigh branch manager for Robert Half, in an email. With that comes the ability to demand a little bit more from either their current employer or a hiring manager from another organization who is in need of top talent. The data also speaks to the demand, particularly in Raleigh-Durham. Strickland points out that the job market has returned to pre-pandemic conditions. There has been an increase of nearly 1 million unfilled jobs to 9.3 million, the highest recorded since 2000, according to the U.S. Labor Department's Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey report released in early June. What has changed since then is the needs and wants of the individual worker, Strickland said. Before, workers might have been more interested in a higher salary or more vacation days. Now, it appears more workers are concerned with maintaining the flexibility that they have had since the onset of the pandemic. Global financial services firm Prudential noted in a May survey that 48% of American workers are rethinking the type of job they want after the pandemic, and 42% of workers who are caregivers indicated workplace flexibility is a priority. Much of workers' desire for flexible work-from-home scheduling stems from needing to be around their families more often, Strickland said. This is the case for stay-at-home dad Eric Landry, a former Go Triangle transportation planner who is looking to re-enter the job market this summer. Landfriend quit his job in March last year to seek another job and looks after his children while his wife works full-time. I'm hoping that I'm able to find something a little more flexible than the sort of typical 9-to-5, said Landfriend, 43, in a phone interview. And you know that's actually kind of become a high priority for me. I don't necessarily need to always work remotely, but in some ways it would be nice because I can have more time with my kids. Landfrig has had his children do remote schooling for the entirety of the pandemic, but they will return in person this fall. Before, he worked typical hours in office a majority of the time. But now asking employers for flexibility with a hybrid work model isn't as hard as it used to be, he said. I think I'm looking for work a little more further afield and then maybe looking nationally because there are, it seems like, a lot of companies are now more comfortable with working remotely, said Landry. I'm hoping that I will sort of expand the job pool for me as well. As coronavirus restrictions ease this year and vaccines rolled out, some of the Triangle's biggest employers, both companies and local governments, adopted a hybrid model by bringing workers back into the office but also allowing many of them to fully or partially work remotely. the NNO reported previously. The Triangle ranked fourth out of 53 metro areas in its share of parents working remote-friendly jobs at 39%, according to an analysis of U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics by Copilot, an online car shopping platform. The Triangle's high percentage of workers who say they'll seek a new job in the next several months in the survey by Robert Half is also due to this region's job market. The booming Raleigh tech sector certainly plays a role because the demand is there and it shows that workers have options, Strickland said. When we see that workers want to quit, it doesn't always mean that they are unhappy or disgruntled in their current jobs. What it really shows is they are confident in their ability to land a better job and perhaps one that fits their lifestyle better. And in Raleigh, where there's extreme demand for workers, particularly in tech, that explains the ranking. Next, GOP senators' districts would get $700 million in proposal. The Senate budget includes at least $765 million in earmarks for local projects and nonprofits, almost all of it in counties represented by Republican senators. The earmarks, sometimes known as pork barrel spending or even member money, are a common practice in the legislature's budget process. But the amounts sent to GOP districts are high this year, in part because the budget would spend billions of dollars in federal American Rescue Plan Act money. The money generally must go to one-time projects and expenses, while any recurring expenditures, such as state employee raises, would need state funding in future years. The NC Insider reviewed hundreds of pages of budget documents and identified more than 200 local projects. Only about 20 of those would go to counties that are represented exclusively by Democrats. And of those 20, 11 went to Cumberland and Hoke counties, where moderate senators Kirk DeVere and Ben Clark were among only four Democrats who voted in favor of the budget in 2019 and were among another group of four voting yes last week. Senator Brent Jackson, a Republican from Sampson County and a top Senate budget writer, argued that the discrepancies between districts is because of all the needs there are in rural North Carolina, such as water and sewer infrastructure projects. It's a question of what the greater need is, he said. The budget funds at least $66.6 million worth of projects in Jackson's three-county district. That's more than $20 million more than any other senator received, with the exception of Jackson's fellow budget writer, Senator Ralph Heiss, Republican from Mitchell County. Projects in Heiss's six-county district in the mountains received at least $73 million. But not all rural, high-poverty counties are represented by Republicans. The budget has no direct appropriations for nine counties in northeastern North Carolina, represented by Senators Toby Fitch, Democrat from Wilson, Ernestine Bazemore, Democrat from Bertie. Those counties are some of the state's poorest by the NC Department of Commerce rankings, and five have majority black populations. Asked why his district would get more projects than those in northeastern rural counties, Jackson argued, "It's not much more in my district. You might need a new adding machine." The counties left out of earmarks will be eligible for the $300 million left in a water and sewer grant fund after the budget spends $250 million of that fund on specific projects in Republican districts. Among the 38 projects set to receive a share of the $250 million, six are in Jackson's district. Two are in Senate leader Phil Berger's home county. Three are in Heiss's district, and two are in fellow budget writer Senator Kathy Harrington's home county, Gaston. Outside of the big-ticket water and sewer projects, the earmarks identified by the insider range in size from $10,000 to fund a veterans memorial in the town of China Grove, home of Senator Carl Ford, Republican from Rowan, to $28 million to renovate the Stanley County Airport, also in Ford's district. Ford boasted to his hometown paper, the Salisbury Post, that Rowan County would receive $20 million in the Senate budget. Many of the earmarks go to county and municipal governments for projects that otherwise have to fund with local revenue. Caldwell County, represented by Senator Warren Daniel, Republican Burke, would get $5 million for a new animal shelter, and the town of Madison in Berger's district would get $3.5 million to develop a new river landing and park. Other earmarks would head to nonprofit groups favored by senators. Gaston Aquatics, a nonprofit in Harrington's district, would get $1 million toward building a pool. The proposed Carolina Museum of the Marine in Jacksonville, Senator Michael Lazara's district, would get $13 million for construction. The Benson American Legion in Jackson's district would get $175,000 for what the budget lists only as paving. Asked to explain the project and two other paving projects in his district, Jackson declined to comment and walked away from the reporter. "I've got nothing else to say to you," he said. Jackson's office did, however, issue a press release touting nearly $80 million for our community. That's higher than the insider's estimate because it appears to include other state agency projects targeted for his district. The press release includes a quote from Berger that says Senator Jackson was instrumental in getting critical infrastructure and other projects approved for his district. Senator Minority Leader Dan Blue said in an emailed statement that while Democrats were asked to send Republicans their budget priorities, their list didn't include many local projects. "When Republicans are asked us to contribute to the budget process, we thought about the good that we could do for the state, particularly given the unprecedented surplus we have now," Blue said. "Democrats submitted our request on behalf of all North Carolinians, not just on behalf of our districts. While we would have liked to see earmarks for our own districts, our first priorities have been on policies and projects that can do the greatest good for the entire state." The GOP's approach, he added, prioritized tax cuts and benefiting their own districts. But two counties represented by Democrats fared as well as some Republican counties, Hoke and Cumberland. Cumberland would get 10 projects totaling about $41 million, and Hoke would get $31 million for courthouse repairs and renovations. Their senators, Clark and DeVere, broke with their party to vote for the budget. Asked if he voted yes because of the funding for his district, Clark said Friday that his decision was based on the overall content of the budget rather than any specific provisions. He says he did send budget requests to Republicans, as the other Democrats did. He said his votes last week don't mean he'll necessarily back future versions of the budget or support an override of any veto by the governor, because I expect improvement as the process continues. DeVere did not respond Friday to phone and email inquiries about his budget vote, but he issued a press release that said that while the spending plan is not perfect, it includes critical funding across our state and local community. For more North Carolina government and politics news, listen to the Under the Dome Politics podcast from the News and Observer and the NC Insider. Next, machines monitor and fire Amazon delivery drivers. At Amazon, machines are often the boss hiring, rating, and firing millions of people with little or no human oversight. People familiar with the strategy say Chief Executive Officer Jeff Bezos believes machines make decisions more quickly and accurately than people, reducing cost and giving Amazon a competitive advantage. Amazon started its gig-style flex delivery service in 2015, and the army of contract drivers quickly became a critical part of the company's delivery machine. Typically, flex drivers handle packages that haven't been loaded on an Amazon van before the driver leaves. Flex drivers earn about $25 an hour, but find that algorithms monitor their every move. Did they get to the delivery station when they said they would? Did they complete their route in the prescribed window? Amazon algorithms scan data for performance patterns and decide which drivers get more routes and which are deactivated. Human feedback is rare. Bloomberg interviewed 15 flex drivers, including four who say they were wrongly terminated, as well as former Amazon managers who say the largely automated system is insufficiently attuned to the real-world challenges drivers face every day. Amazon knew delegating work to machines would lead to mistakes and damaging headlines, these former managers said, but decided it was cheaper to trust the algorithms than pay people to investigate mistaken firings, so long as the drivers could be replaced easily. In a statement, Amazon spokeswoman Kate Kudnaw called drivers' claims of poor treatment, unfair termination, anecdotal, and said they don't represent the experience of the vast majority of flex drivers. As independent contractors, flex drivers have little recourse when they believe they've been deactivated unfairly. When human managers get involved, they typically conduct a hasty review, if they do one at all, because they must meet their own performance standards. Nidra Lira of Arlington, Texas, started making deliveries through the Amazon Flex app in 2017. She liked the flexibility and opportunity to pocket about $80 for a four-hour route after subtracting gas for her Chevrolet Trax crossover. She estimates that she delivered about 8,000 packages and had a great performance rating most of the time. But there were many drivers lined up outside the delivery station, and she waited as long as an hour to retrieve her packages, putting her behind schedule. So she got dropped. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.